Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, the first half, I give a very passionate speech about pot committing, going into everything with all your chips. I think you're going to want to get the kids around the pod and listen to this, because I got a little flamethrower wisdom coming your way that could be one of my all-time greats. So get ready for that. First, I'll tell you about the JB Weld. Just a quick 15 seconds on JB Weld epoxy adhesives, brand used by pros and DIYers, trusted for 50 years plus, available at jbweld.com. Retailers everywhere, Home Depot, Lowe's, AutoZone, Advance Auto Parts, O'Reilly, Walmart, and Michaels. JB Weld.
Podcast One presents, this is a collect call from Sing Sing.
My name is John J. Lennon. I'm locked up for selling drugs and committing murder. I'm also a contributor for Esquire magazine and the Marshall Project. So I'm a writer and I'm a prisoner. Imagine trying to stay focused and talk about issues of substance with gates slamming, prisoners screaming, and PAs blaring in the background.
Get new episodes every Wednesday on Spotify, Podcast One, and Apple Podcasts.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Patrick Warburton. With Gina Grad on news and a new Eat Your Feelings dish, and Bald Brian on sound effects. And now, maybe tear gas was the disinfectant Trump thinks people should ingest. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. Welcome to the show, and thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. Good to see you, Gina Grad.
Good to see you.
And Bald Brian.
Yes.
And Christy is there as well, Bald's beautiful wife, because we're going to give a little update on Brian's health. I'll let you take it. You tell us all about it.
Thank you. Let me put on gallery view here. Yeah, unexpected update today, because you had mentioned out of the blue, which was very random, on Monday, like, hey, how about a health update? And like, well, I'm getting an MRI today, and I'm getting results on Wednesday, which is today as we record this. So let's table that, because we can give a fuller picture at that point. At this point, we'll be guessing. So I got an MRI today in person, went to Cedars-Sinai with Christy, and met with our doctor for the first time in person in a few months. And backing up a couple steps. So in January of this year, he saw something on an MRI, at a regular scheduled MRI, and he saw like a shadow right on the MRI. Nothing significant, but significant enough to be like, you know what? He's aggressive. I want to make sure that we do the right thing at the right time. So he actually put me on low dose Temodar, which is chemotherapy, the same chemotherapy I had 10 years ago.
All right. So let's just stop for 1 second. Just set the table very briefly. You know, the tumor is 10 years old now?
I was diagnosed in April of 2009, so my tumor just turned 11.
Oh, 11.
Yeah, thank you.
That's happy right. Birthday.
Obviously, the last with Bald Brian was the 10-year anniversary of that. So yeah, 11 years past diagnosis. Initially had radiation and chemotherapy, the aforementioned Temodar. And that was really rough. As you guys remember, I was on a walker. You remember my speech. Mm-hmm. It was a dark time. Made a big comeback shortly after that on Avastin, which was, you know, came at just the right time. And it's been 10 years of, I would say, smooth sailing, but it's never smooth sailing when you have brain tumor. You know, there's blips here and there, but more or less, you know, I'm here. We have the baby and the daughter and all that stuff. So 10 years of relatively calm waters. Mm-hmm. And so January of this year, of 2020, going for regularly scheduled MRI, doctor sees what I guess you would describe as a shadow.
The flare.
He's just like, you know, I don't like the looks of this. I just to be safe and proactive and get ahead of this thing, I'm going to put you on a low dose of that chemotherapy that you were on 10 years ago. And so from January to now, I've been on Temodar. I've been on chemo.
Does that mean like intravenously or a tablet?
Thankfully, it's an oral pill that I take at night, but it leaves me extremely fatigued, which is funny because during this whole COVID thing, number one, I'm I haven't really told anyone aside from Christy, and that's more or less it. And so I've been at a really high risk, you know what I mean? So I've been trying to sort of like on the low key, stay away from crowds and, you know, anything could be considered high risk.
Okay, drama queen, go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. And so, where was I going with this? The chemo.
They had a flare up.
Oh yeah. So at the time, so January, so Christy goes to him, he's like, how worried are you? Like, should we be freaked out or worried? And he's like, yeah, out of 10, or where are you? He's like, I'm like at a 4 out of 10. And I was like, okay, well, we're concerned, but we're not alarmed, obviously. And then I've had MRIs every month for the last 6 months, and they've all come back stable, more or less the same, which is obviously really good news when you're dealing with a tumor that may be growing. And so we go in this morning for a MRI result, and he looks at it and he's like, well, I do see some changes, and he points out these two little, and he even admitted, he's like, these are tiny, but still two tiny little dots where they shouldn't be two tiny little dots. And what else? A little thickening.
Thickening of the actual like tumor area.
Which means it's brighter on the scan. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's not growing per se. It's not going like this. It's just getting more, you know, darker on the scan, because they give me contrast, right, when they do the MRI.
It's like a light bulb if it was like trying to warm up. Like it's like trying to warm up before it's getting to like full speed capacity. You're just not seeing it expanding.
And so he says to us this morning, he's like, same thing. I want to be aggressive. I want to be proactive. I want to get ahead of this thing. I want to do things now before it's too late. So he's like, I recommended three different courses of treatment. One of which is going back on Avastin, which I've been off for 2 years. And we're kind of leaning in that direction. So this is all very new. We just had the doctor's appointment 4 hours ago. So you guys are kind of the first to know.
Are there side effects of Avastin?
There are, luckily, very luckily. I not only have minimal side effects from Avastin, I also respond really well to it.
Right.
You know, they put me in that category of super responders, keep saying. So I'm optimistic. He's optimistic. This is something of, you know, this is not the worst. This is not great news, but this is not the worst news. And it came as a shock, obviously, but we're... I'm optimistic. How about you?
I mean, I'm terrified, if I'm being honest. But yeah, always optimistic, just in the context of everything, and the experience at the hospital this morning just amidst COVID was wild. But always optimistic, right? Mm-hmm. Like 10 years ago, there was one experimental treatment called Avastin. It wasn't even approved and you got on it. And now here's three courses of treatment. If one doesn't work, we'll try the next one. But the issue is trying to get insurance to approve it.
They've already rejected our first attempt.
Yeah, within an hour of putting it in, they rejected it.
What did they base that on? Or what do they say?
As our doctor says, it's based on the whims of the insurance company. Like, it sounds insane, and Drew could probably tell you a lot more about this, but it is how they're feeling that day.
Like the whims of the agent that you talk to.
Right. Yeah, because at some point, everything is new. Nothing is carved in stone. It's not a kind of a, you know, their jobs. If you lay carpet, you want to know how many square feet. This carpet is $9 a square foot installed, and then you just give them a number. But insurance is a lot of people going, I don't know.
How bad is it? He's been good for 10 years, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, obviously with an eye toward not giving you any money. So sadly, that's the way they're leaning. But so the idea, the best thing, because it's inoperable, and that'll be another question I'll ask, which is technology moves along in that department as well. May it ever be operable? That's something we'll sit on for a second.
Mm. That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that.
We didn't ask
that a biopsy is possible if it was necessary.
It's a high risk. It's like 10% high risk. I don't know the fancy medical terms that Dr. Rudnick used this morning, but he was like, based on where it is in the brain, we don't have any like biological evidence of the type of tumor that it is.
There's no pathology. They can't tell exactly what the tumor, you know.
Yeah, because one of the options was immunotherapy, which they basically will not cover with insurance. And so that might bankrupt us, so we're not going to do that. We're going to look at a different option.
Last resort.
Well, we can have we can start a GoFundMe page. Obviously, I wet my beak. Obviously, it's not all going in your pocket. So 10 years, almost 11. Oh, past 11, right?
Past 11.
Past 11 years. And the idea is no news is good news. It's no movement. It's a tumor. It can't be operated on, so it has to stop. And if it grows or changes, that's bad news. And so it's been essentially not changing for numbers of years, I'm guessing.
A decade at least, yeah.
And now it's changing, not necessarily growing, but the idea that there's change or movement is the non-good news of this part of this discussion, right?
That's a very accurate takeaway. Yeah. Yes. Any difference, any change, excuse me, in the scans he takes is like, oh, got to take a look at this.
He was basically like, the tumor looks like it might start to be waking up. Sorry, I'm hearing myself, but waking up. And we want to stop it before it like takes a big stretch.
Right. Wow. And thank God there's these, well, the doctors, and thank God there's the materials and the medicines. And and then so like, what would it cost? Like if the insurance company doesn't cover something you'd like, a direction you'd like to go, the pharmaceutical direction.
We haven't even, like I said, it's been 4 hours since we saw the doctor. We're going to cross that bridge when we come to it.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll never come to it because hopefully that option is, you know, in third place, you know, behind, the other two options are to go back on Avastin, which I was doing for 10 years quite well, as you can imagine, or doing a sort of newer modified Avastin that is not infused, but is in fact oral. So
he could take it like Avastin in pill form at home,
which would be super convenient.
Wow. The 10 years ago, or I guess 8 years ago when you were on Avastin, you were doing twice monthly infusions. Each of those bills were $55,000 an infusion.
And they tapered me off over the
$55,000
for like an hour and a half.
Per infusion. Jesus Christ. Yeah. But the insurance paid for that, right?
Yeah. Yes. And they most likely will again. I don't want to alarm people and think that we're, you know, crying poor and all that. That's not what this is about. We're hopefully when that first bridge comes, it's one that insurance takes care of.
I now have a lot of experience dealing with insurance appeals, and my favorite go-to phrase is, I'm sorry, I just don't accept that. Yeah, so right. They cannot get
I'll
me
to remember
the
that. So get that drop, Chris. Get that drop.
I am so used to doing this. I am happy to do it again.
It's crazy, right? Yeah, I think it's the insane. Bigger point is like something he's been on before that's been proven and widespread for the past 10 years. Like they'll approve fairly quickly, maybe 3 or 4 days in. The second option is the Avastin, like take-home pill. It's not Avastin. It's like God knows what it's newer, called. We have no idea what it's called.
Right.
That's going to take more time. That's what they already rejected.
Because
and immunotherapy,
because
they like
convenient
won't cover.
For you. And so, I mean, like, yeah, why would they do something that actually helps you and is convenient? Yeah.
What? So what is the next visit? What's the next MRI?
Weirdly enough, they set me up with a phone visit. I think it's temporary. Mm-hmm. I think what's going to happen, the next domino to fall, is we'll see if we can get insurance to cover what we want it to cover. And then we'll go from there in terms of, you know, what option seems best for us. And then Dr. Rudnick specifically mentioned he wants to do an MRI 1 month after we start therapy. So we'll have an idea if maybe it's working or if things are holding steady or what, you know, who knows at that point. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any physical feelings, any sensations or anything that feels differently? Sometimes it's hard to tell.
That's the weird part. You remember 10 years, 11 years ago when I was diagnosed, I was in bad shape. I was, you know, I was dragging my foot. I was having speech problems. It was very obvious. I had numbness in my face. It was very obvious that there was something going on up there. I don't have any of that this time. I hope, I mean, aside from maybe my computer dragging a little bit, hopefully I sound more or less the same. I don't have any speech issues. I'm much more tired. Mm-hmm. And I'm much weaker than I was, but I've also not been to physical therapy in 2 months, and I've been on fucking chemotherapy for 6 months. You know what I mean?
When are they talking about restarting physical therapy and those sorts of protocols?
I went yesterday for the first time in 3 months.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it's, I'm committed to, you know, remember my New Year's resolution was put on 5 pounds of muscle. Obviously that's not happening at this point, but that's still a goal. So, trying to get back to normal as fast as possible.
Christy, I should give Christy a plug, but I'm trying to look at what happened to our plugs on my screen.
GoFundMe/
No, stop. That's not funny.
I have it. What? I have it on a piece of paper.
No, don't. Yeah.
You should have her plugs on a paper out there.
I should. I agree with you when you say I should have her plugs on a piece of paper there.
It's fine.
I'm 100% with you in the I should have it. The question is,
it's been a tough week for all of us, but Christy especially, because, you know, obviously the riots and the protests and everything, the COVID and the fucking this and that. Yesterday, our company went through layoffs. Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's in the press. So I went through layoffs yesterday, and
she still has a job, thankfully,
it's just been.
Well, we'll make it through this. Thanks, Christy. Pardon my crumbs, by the way, on Twitter and Instagram as well. And exactly. On a piece of paper somewhere in this building, theoretically. not in the studio.
And live and commercial grade. Commercial grade, the podcast.
Oh, commercial grade, the podcast as well.
All right, have fun.
Thank you, Christy. Godspeed. Should be on that paper as well. All right, let's see. So, not good news, but not horrible news, just different news and cause for, some concern, but also just sort of cause to be vigil, right? To go like, okay, yeah. We have to kind of keep an eye now, and I'm going to do this protocol and that protocol, right?
And take action, you know what I mean, as fast as possible. This is the kind of thing where it's like, oh, we got our first sign that things may be going sideways. Maybe they are, maybe they aren't, but it's not prudent to wait.
Well, I'm so glad you don't have a wait and see doctor. That would be everything.
Yeah.
There's plenty of those.
Yeah. All right. So you'll keep us updated on that. And thanks Absolutely. For that update. All right.
Thank you for giving me the time.
Now I got the papers in here. All right. Let's see.
Get the papers.
So it's a weird. We do seem to be kind of jammed for time around here a lot, except for everyone's sitting in the building for a couple hours before the show starts. I never get that like jammed at the end feeling.
There's only one of us that's pressed for time around here.
I'll blame Kayla. All right. Let's see. So I had some thoughts, and let's look down at my stuff. So I wanted those. I've been obsessed with Dr. Barbara Ferrer because I believe that she's lying to us, and I don't believe she's the right person to be heading up, or at least the tip of the spear of when we're coming back or when things are opening or what the plan is. She's incompetent to me, but she's a PhD. She has a PhD in social welfare. But as the more I think about her saying, look, here's what I'm worried about. I'm worried, number one, about the beaches, number two, about the boardwalks, and number three, about peaceful protests. And I'm like, why are you bringing up the beaches? And I know I've brought this up before, but I'm saying it's like, why, as the person who knows what's going on, is consulting with a bevy of experts, and then who's going to go out and share the information with us, why is your number one concern the place that is everyone's least concern, where there's no history of spreading of this disease? You know, from what we've learned, it's a lot about nursing homes. It's a lot about subways. It's a lot about cramped apartment buildings. We've learned about obesity. We've learned about vitamin D. We've learned about sunshine. We've learned about pre-existing conditions. We've learned about everything. The one thing we've learned from the beach is it's a nothing burger. There's just nothing there. It could help. That's all we don't have. We had a big Daytona spring break party situation going 3 months ago. Everyone said those people are killing themselves. Nothing came of that. We had another big Ozark pool party. Those guys were killing themselves. Nothing came of that. Why is she starting with the beach? Why is that part of her repertoire? Like, I need to go out and share information. So there's a scared public out there. The economy's in the tank. We've been shut down for 3 months. I'm going to get out there and share my information with these people. And she starts with her concerns, which is fine. But she doesn't say anything about nursing homes or public transportation or elevators. She starts with the beach.
My only guess, and this is not a good reason, my only guess is that it's summertime, it's getting hot, people want to go to the beach, like people are intending to go, they'd like to go, and so her first thought is, but I know where your head's at, don't go to the beach. Is that possible?
It's possible, but there's no danger from the bee.
I agree. I think it's not a good reason. I think that's why she says it.
You have that clip, Max Zapata? No. The beach thing, the one I was telling you to get 3 hours ago?
Yeah, we have that.
Okay. It's not on my screen, by the way. But I just want to drill down on it for a second. Go ahead.
Obviously, you know, when I look and I see people on the beach that are really close together without face coverings, or people on a boardwalk that are really close together without face.
So she's concerned. She's concerned about the beach. I don't think she's concerned about the beach. If she's concerned about the beach, she should be fucking shit canned this afternoon. She's not an expert. She should not be concerned about the beach. Nobody's concerned about the beach. I talked to Mike August. He went out for his anniversary last night. He was like in Hermosa or Redondo or something. There's like, there's fucking people all over the place. They're all over the beach. The place never really shut down and people have always been there. Her concern isn't the beach. Now, why is she worried about the beach? She's not worried about the beach. I think what she's doing is, and I think what we're in California and especially Los Angeles, I think we're trying to build a fucking time machine to make a bunch of people who are wrong right. I think the beach should have never been closed down, but no one wants to eat it on that. So we keep talking about, like, as if there's something there. There's no there there. You were wrong. You made a bad decision. It was a bad call. It was irresponsible. You should have focused on nursing homes and elevators and public transportation. You went for the fucking beach. Nothing's happened at the beach. And we don't need to start press conferences with you talking about concern about the beach. That's you concerned for your boss's ass. That's not you being concerned about the beach. That's you making yourself right through a very slow process of, well, we'll wait for the weeks to come out. We don't know what's going on. You know what's going on. You're wrong. Just say you're wrong and move on. Move the fuck on to the next thing. Open the fucking restaurants. Open the fucking beaches. You're insane, people. You're driving this fucking economy into the ground, and it's all under the auspices of, well, we were right about the beach. You're going to retroactively make yourself right about something you're 100% wrong about, and it's been months. There's no reason to even talk about it anymore. I told Max Zapata, look up the protocol on the beach in LA County. You may swim, you may surf, you may jog, but you may not lay a towel down.
Wet sand, not dry sand.
What you guys, what they're doing is they're doing a specific thing as if it exists, as if they're building they're constructing something that doesn't need to be constructed, because it seems like, well, I'm in charge and I have the answers. You have no answers. You have no data. People can lay down on the beach in the sand. People don't get closer than 6 feet anyway when they lay down on the sand. But you're doing it this way, and you'll do it slowly enough so it'll sort of seem like you were right. But you were wrong, and you're just making yourself right by going, okay, now next week we go to phase three. Phase three is what? Why are we talking about this? Why isn't everything just open? The rest of the fucking country, half the country's open. I was looking at pictures of a rally, I think, in Boston, that park, Max Zapata.
Franklin Park.
Seemed like tens of thousands of souls all just packed together.
Oh, wow.
At the park.
That's a Patriots Super Bowl party.
Right. And this thing of like, well, we can't have sporting events anymore. We're going to close down Pebble Beach. There'll be no more Pebble Beach. There'll be no more Quail Lodge. There'll be no more this, no more that. These are throngs of people, just piles and piles of people, mostly wearing masks, but not practicing any kind of social distancing at all. They are up in each other's grills. Now, something should happen. We should have news of devastation. Or really what we should be doing is flying over it with crop dusters filled with Purell. And just, if you really meant it, if these people are on a suicide mission now, break it up, man. They shouldn't be allowed to do this. We go to fucking restaurants. Like, you can eat outdoors. You put the table 6 foot apart. Hang a sheet of Lucite in between your table and that table. Or we can get 100,000 people and go to the park. Well, which is it?
Right.
All right. Now, you want to know why I fucking never believe anything these assholes say. It's because of this. Sorry, go ahead,
Gina. But what else doesn't make any sense about this is, it's not like, I was going to say nobody would blame them. Some people would blame them, and they'd be right too. But when everybody comes out and says, this is a new virus, we know nothing about it, we will figure it out as we go, nobody's going to blame you for getting it wrong. We already know nobody has ever seen this before. So if you come out and say, we're still learning about this, we thought you could catch it outside, turns out it doesn't look like you can. So just giving us those facts, nobody's going to blame you for quote unquote getting it wrong. We already know we don't know about it.
Modifying your position is never, as more information comes in, especially in a situation like this, no reasonable person would be like, how dare you?
There already exist 2,000 hours of every politician from every side of the aisle saying the wrong thing. It all exists.
Right.
No one's going to hold you to it. We have tons of Trump saying the wrong thing. We have Fauci on like Anderson Cooper in March saying, well, you don't need masks. This thing's going to be, it's going to be the flu, but it's not going to be bad. Like, we have everyone saying everything wrong already.
Right.
Oh, fine. It's like we're all the Kardashians and we got a bootleg porn and it's up on the internet. So we don't need to be so worried about wearing a towel outside the shower. You know, you can see my ding-a-ling. It's up on the internet. You know what I'm saying? Like, every politician has been right a little bit and wrong a lot. They all made the wrong choices. They didn't focus on the nursing homes. They focused on locking down. Maybe locking down was a bad choice.
Speaking of locking down, they didn't focus on nursing homes. They focused on inmates and they focused on the homeless and they left the aged to die.
Right. Okay. So with that in mind, let's start giving our press conferences with some info that isn't about making you retroactively right about something you should never impose in the first place. Yes, Brian.
I just had this thought. So I totally agree. And obviously it's an adult point of view to modify your thinking as you go along in new information. That's what adults do. Do you remember the, can you guys remember the criticism that was branded on John Kerry? What was John Kerry famous for?
John Kerry.
The ketchup empire?
Well, what was the criticism?
He had the Swift boat stuff.
Flip flopper. He was a flip flopper. Remember, they were throwing flip flops, and George Bush successfully branded him a flip flopper.
Oh, sorry, I remember him in his Swift.
Yeah, I know. I should have prepped that a little better. But in the Senate, here he had so many votes for this and so many votes against this that it was like, oh, you're a flip flopper, and it's like, ever since then, changing your mind or evolving your opinion has become completely verboten. You can't do that.
Yeah, I don't get it, and especially when it's something we've never seen before. So feel free to be very pliable and very mobile and very, very with every bit of new information that comes in, be ready to change, be ready to modify.
Factor that in.
Yeah, so I would ask, I think we should all just go to the beach, spread out of town, just fucking lay out. I have no idea what we're even doing. I don't know what's going on with the restaurants now.
They don't either.
It's just nobody knows.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's talks about it, but once all the George Floyd stuff started happening, it just disappeared from anybody's updates.
Essentially, last Friday, if you were in compliance, if your restaurant was in compliance, you could open up no problem. The next day, the riot started and everybody boarded up their businesses. So nobody really knows right now.
Well, I don't know. When are we back for Texas? 2 weeks now? We just went and ate at steaks every single night, flew on an airplane. No problemo. So, all right, I'm done. Moving on. Let's not live in fear, everyone. Look, Bald Brian has medical reasons to do this. The rest of you who went fucking pot committed on this thing, because I think there's a big problem. When I heard about all this doom and gloom and it was all coming for me and coming for my kids and everything else, I did not go pot committed. My daughter went all in. She took all her fucking chips and pushed them all across the table. She'll probably have a little PTSD thanks to all the fucking news agencies scaring the fuck out of her over the last 3 months. And it made, by the way, for plenty of conflict while we're quarantining, because she's quarantining and I'm not quarantining. So I have to have a fucking argument with her every time I come back from the house, because I'm not a fucking pussy. I'm not fear-based and I'm not fucking pot committed. When I heard about this shit, I didn't push all my chips in the middle of the table because I've heard too much of this shit. I threw in like three $10 chips and I was like, I want to see what hand I get dealt before I
want to see the flop. I want to see the flop.
I want to see the river and the flop. I don't even know what the river is.
That's the two ends. There's a turn in the middle.
But I want to see that. And I
you wanted to see the flop.
I kept watching, and they kept trying, and they kept trying, and they kept trying. But I just kept watching, and I was like, I don't think so. So for me, I didn't pot commit. A lot of pussies I know in this town especially went full pot commit, and now they're in. That's all they have. So they're trying to justify their fucking pussy pot commit. And they're working hard at it. Don't go the, okay, go to the beach, but no, you can jog, but you can fly a kite, but you can't lay in the sand. That's them trying to fucking salvage their pot. They went full pot. You lost it. Write it off and move the fuck on. You were fucking fear-based. You're a pussy and you pot committed. You should have never pot committed on this. Should have never. You should have known who these people are. They're in the scare business. That's what they do. They freak you the fuck out. That's what they do, but you bought in. You should have never pot committed. Throw in a couple chips. Wait and hear a little data. Throw in a couple more chips. Maybe there's something else going on. Maybe take a few out, but never pot commit. That's what they want you to do. Sorry, Brian. Go ahead.
No, you're right. You mentioned don't live in fear, and you mentioned that, you know, people like me, or just me, has a reason to follow all these protocols. We've been to the beach. We've been to the beach a couple times. We've sat out both times. We go out, we leave our house. We wear, you know, masks and whatever to mitigate our exposure. And all we ask is that people do the same, not do the exact same, but do the same, and that they do what's reasonable. You know what I mean? Don't go licking doorknobs, but yeah, do what's reasonable. Wash your hands and maintain a distance if you can. And go to the beach, for God's sake. Just don't sit on someone else's towel.
Dawson. Oh, Dawson doesn't have a spleen. That's right.
Yeah, I'm one of those dudes. I'm one of those dudes that they say is at risk.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't know it.
I don't, right.
Don't be a one-upper, like I said before.
Dawson has not modified his schedule much.
Strong as an ox.
I have not either, and I'll be glad that I did not join the group of pussy pot committers when this thing came, and when the next one comes down the pike, and it's coming. It's always, there's always one on deck and one in the hole. There's another reason to have you completely freaked out and completely scared, and to go all in on the next, whatever they're cooking up in the newsrooms right now. Be prepared. So think about the concept of pot committing, which is those chips, that's your life. The metaphor of the pot commit. Those chips, that's your life. And you don't have an infinite number of chips to play with. You have to kind of decide, you know, how much should I go in? How much should I keep? How much do I leave? How much do I need for other people? And so and so, so and so forth. And it's like when my daughter was explaining to me in, you know, March, hey, tell all your guys, go home, no more work, tell them to stay in their apartment. I was like, that is not an option. We can do things to mitigate the danger of this, although we never did, but I was telling her that. But I can't tell them to go bury themselves in their apartment. That's not an option. We need to figure out how much to commit and how much to keep safe. And I didn't want to push it all out in front of me, because then you become a ward of the state. You essentially become a ward of the state. You might as well fucking live in an orphanage where Gavin Newsom is the headmaster. Because when you pot commit, that's it. You're fucking locked in your apartment. You have no income. You can't help other people around you. I provide a lot of income for a lot of people around me. If I pot committed, then I'm out. They're fucking out too. I'm not going to become a ward of the state. And by the way, Garcetti, that fucking pussy, you think I'm going to take marching orders from that fucking pussy? Are you fucking nuts? I'm never going to do that. Why would you ever do that? It's the opposite of living in the United States. It's the opposite of living in California. It's the opposite of all that this country is. So I'm not going to listen to that fucking scared pussy and his fucking platitudes. No way. I'm going to put a few chips in. I'm going to hear what they have to say. I'm going to talk to people and listen to people and study things. I'm not just going to and I'm going to keep my eyes open when they start giving me who died. I want to know how old those people were. I want to know if they had pre-existing conditions. I start hearing stories about healthy 30-year-old guys being ravaged by this disease. I will put in a bunch more chips. When I start hearing, when they tell me these stories, when I start seeing like, Oh, these people are at Daytona. They're on the beach. They're frolicking on the beach. They're having chicken fights on the beach. And now, 4 weeks later, their communities have been decimated by, I'm putting in more chips. If I hear...
That's Pocket Kings.
Right.
Putting more chips.
If I hear nothing, I'm not putting in more chips. They want me to put in more chips. I'm not putting in more chips. I want to hear some more news. If you guys go full pot committal on everything you hear, you're going to have a horrible life. You have to think about your quality of life. It's not their quality of life. It's your quality of life. They have a fine quality of life. They're living the life they want. What do they want? They want to tell you what to do. Oh, good. They're having the fucking greatest day of their life. Because it's nothing but telling you what to do. But I don't want to do what people tell me what to do. I want to do what I want to do. I don't want to endanger other people. And I don't want to be reckless about it. But I will be in charge of that. Let's not listen to the fuck. And by the way, I've interviewed Gavin Newsom for over an hour. That guy's an idiot. He doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about. And neither does Garcetti. And this Dr. Barbara Ferrer chick seems nuttier than both of them. And the least... I can't think of a person I'd listen to less about anything. So what are we doing here, people? You pot committed. All right. The people who pot committed, that's on you. You're operating from fear. You fucked up. You listened to the people I told you not to listen to, and you made a mistake, and now you're out. You're out. Fine. Mm-hmm. Let's not defend it. You made a mistake. You went all in. You have to go in incrementally. You have to listen to what people say and not to what they're saying on the news. You have to kind of create your own news. You have to hear the stories about all, like, it's like thousands, hundreds, tens of thousands of people at Franklin Park in Boston. Okay, I want to hear what happens to those people. I want to know what goes on in that community. I already know next to nothing because we've already done this for the last almost 2 weeks now. But fine. But in general, let's just use this as a little teachable moment, everyone, not to go pot committed in any facet of life. Always put it. I'm not saying don't put any chips in. When somebody says, hey, we have a virus, it's unfamiliar. It's spreading throughout the land. You can go, okay, that sounds like something. I'm not going to ignore it. I'm not going to say it doesn't exist. I'm going to put a few chips in. And then after that, let's keep listening. Let's keep learning. And don't just turn it on Fox or CNN and listen to what they say. They want you to pot commit. You understand? Like, they're selling you condos in Daytona Beach. They want this. They're offering a lifestyle to you. Don't just sit and watch.
A short presentation.
Yes. It's all an informational presentation to scare you. And if you don't get it, why is it always going in the direction of scared? You start hearing things like, we've reached a grim milestone of almost 80,000. Well, what do you mean? First off, 80,000 is not a milestone. 100,000 is a milestone. 50,000 is a milestone. And you didn't reach it. You almost reached it, which is not reaching it. Listen to how they word everything, and you'll know. So then keep your chips, have your chips, use your chips wisely, put them in as necessary. But don't pot commit. Too many people pot committed, and now they're fucking bankrupt. And the fucking powers that be, many of them pot committed too, and they're trying to get their money back from the casino by going, well, I'm really concerned about the beaches and the boardwalks. You're fucking lying. You're trying to get your money back. You made a mistake. Open it
they're
up.
They're going full. The desert inn has heart.
The desert inn has heart.
Nice.
The desert inn has
now
heart.
Now that you rehearsed the pot committed speech, how's that going to go over with Natalia?
Well, Natalia is now living two lives because when I walked into my kitchen last night at 11:30, there were four girls making French toast, cinnamon sugar French toast. But I'm also getting the part where, you know, the workman can't come into the building, can't come into the house, but her four friends can have a slumber party. She's starting to modify it. That's the other thing about the pot commit. Remember, all the people that are trying to get you to pot commit, they have jobs. And not only have jobs, this is booming business for them. This is salad days for them. This is great ratings and great money. So all the people that are sitting in air-conditioned studios telling you to never leave your apartment are getting paid. And so are all the politicians. Everyone's getting paid, but the folks, they're telling what to do. So the press who covers them is getting paid. The politicians getting paid. The small businesses that are going under, those, they're not getting paid. So also think about what the message is and what the motives are. I mean, how long are you not going to get paid and tell everyone to keep it locked down? I don't know many of those people. I know everyone. So everyone who has a small business is desperately trying to figure out a way to reopen. And everyone who runs the economy and runs the state is busily thinking of ways to stay locked down. You have to understand there's an agenda.
It's in their best interest. It's in the business interest.
It's an agenda that is, I don't even say it's volitional sometimes. It's just, there's a very different cadence we all have. Everybody in this world, in my world, has maintained getting paid. And everyone connected with Corolla Digital remains, has not had an interrupted paycheck. Everyone connected with Chassis Media and make all the documentaries, those people have all been paid. Continue to be paid. No, there's been no interruption. There's been no decrease, and there's been no interruption. There's been no take a haircut. There's nothing. There is the people connected with building, restoration, doing the car, no haircuts, no decrease, no interruptions. But if there were, a lot of people would be talking differently. If I said, hey, man, they shut us down and I'll see you whenever, a lot of those people rightfully would be going, hey, when can we get back to it? And those conversations we would have had those conversations weeks ago. So remember, everybody who's taking the pulpit and everyone who's given the press conference and everyone who's covering them, they're all getting paid. They're all coming from a place of getting paid. And they don't have businesses that are being looted or glass that's being broken or any of that. They
except
just have
CNN.
Yeah, except CNN. They have a job. That's true.
All right. It's funny because like everyone's like, oh, insurance will cover that. Insurance will cover the businesses, you know, the small businesses that are probably going to talk to an owner later. But it's like, yeah, insurance companies don't work swiftly. In the meantime, I have no income.
Yeah. Right. And speaking of that, I can't remember if we talked about it on here or on KFI that a lot of the insurance covers the structure. It doesn't cover your inventory. Was that on KFI? Oh, okay.
But
so that's going to be very, very tough for a lot of people who got looted.
All right. Let me hit LifeLock here. Coronavirus sparked an increase in cybercrime complaints to the FBI, like domain names, spoofing, PPE vendors, scams, promising government checks, and fake COVID charities. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives. Every day, we put our info out on the internet. Cybercriminals keep finding new ways to steal identities. It's things you could miss if you're just checking for threats and monitoring your credit. You need LifeLock. You need protection, people. You need the industry standard. It is LifeLock, right, Dawson?
LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web. If they detect your info has potentially been compromised, they'll send you an alert and you'll have a dedicated restoration specialist for your case. No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. LifeLock can see threats you might miss on your own. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year by using promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LifeLock or head to LifeLock.com. Use promo code Adam for 25% off.
All right, we'll get an update from Billy Yang. He's the liquor store owner across from Cedars, where Brian was probably just at, who got to play. His dad was murdered while working there years ago, and now it's been looted again. We'll take a quick break, and we'll come back with that right after this.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Hey, man, what's going on? I really like listening to the clips of your mayor because I live outside of southeastern Philly, so I don't hear a lot from your mayor. But it's fun listening to a retarded robot communist. Get it on.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
He's not a robot. Hey, Billy. Let's check in, Billy Yang. We talked to, I guess, at the beginning of the week. How's it going for you right now? Or set the table. Liquor store, family owned. How many years? Limited? Yeah. Here we go.
So to recap, our family came to this country in 83, and I want to say we started the business around 84, 85. And a typical immigrant family, except our story is that we happened to be in an area that was probably better than most. It's by Cedars-Sinai, as you mentioned, but it's not across the street. It's actually a few blocks over.
Across from Jones on 3rd, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay, that's right.
Yeah, for people that don't know, when the shit went down in 92, a lot of liquor stores and stuff being looted, but it was kind of south centrally, closer, a little more downtown, and not really that part of town. That is a nicer, more affluent part of town. Sorry, go ahead.
I remember I was probably in the 8th grade. I think, Bald Brian, you and I are around the same age. And
right.
Sounds I remember... Right. So actually, it's funny, Adam, I actually went to Walter Reed and North Hollywood High.
Wow.
And I distinctly remember driving over like Laurel Canyon back towards LA because I was in the, I'm not trying to brag, but I was in the magnet program. So we got bussed over there or driven over there. And as we were driving back, I saw just plumes of smoke everywhere. And, you know, as an eighth grader, you don't really understand exactly what's going on. But I just remember it was a scary time.
Your dad was... shot and killed working there in 94?
No, 2004.
Oh, 2004. Sorry. Oh.
Yeah. So I was working a marketing job and, it happened early Saturday morning. I was actually at a holiday party or a company holiday party the night before. And, phone just rang off the hook Saturday morning on the 18th of December. And, two guys came in with masks and gloves and took him by surprise. And, you know, my dad was a pretty stoic John Wayne type. And I guess when you have a gun pointed at your face and they run into you, your immediate instinct is to grab it. And they kind of pointed the gun down and shot him in the face and then one more time the head. And it, just all the stuff I had to, like, I couldn't unsee because they actually aired it on the news. And that was just a horrific time.
And they shot him again in the head just to make sure he wasn't going to survive and ID them, I guess. It's anyway. And they caught the guys. Yeah. Correct.
They did. I mean, thankfully they didn't have a whole lot to go on and we had to do a press conference in front of the store. And I just became the de facto spokesperson for the family. And, we had to ask for the public's help. We didn't have a lot of leads. And thanks to the person who broke the case, it came in form of a tip, I think. After the plea, he saw that and called in, and turned out, you know, these guys were casing the place for a couple of days. And we got video evidence of that. You see them clearly, like, looking over and walking around. So it was... all this was revealed in the courtroom when we were attending trial. As I had mentioned, Judge Ito was our judge.
Right. It's so, for me in life, it's weird because I'm wired to hate waste. I hate waste. And I know it sounds weird when you put it toward a human, but
it's the ultimate waste.
It's the ultimate waste. I when I hear about, you know, bank robberies and things that went wrong or criminality or airlines crashing or whatever, airplanes crashing or boats capsizing and people dying. A lot of times shit happens. Like, that's our society. When I have commercial airliners, there's going to be a bird strike at some point. They're going to crash at some point. But they just sort of shoot in the face for no reason over $80 and a bottle of mezcal tequila. Like, that stuff drives me nuts because it's such a nothing. There's nothing. I don't know what they made off with. I don't know what they even took. I don't know why they had to shoot him again like that. And now they're in jail and your dad's, been gone for 16 years and it's all waste to me. That part drives me nuts.
Well, yeah, but so is anger, and just letting it fester, and that energy not going anywhere. So I think I told you on the last call that
bread and butter of this show, Billy.
Yeah, that's all I do is yell.
I understand the format. I understand the format, but I did decide that, you know, from being, it was this weird confluence of two different families, right? In the courthouse, we distinctly saw this family that was broken, and there we were. We were, you know, always dressed in suits, always were a Christian family by and large, although I'm not, but it was this confluence of two distinctly different upbringings. And that's when I had an aha moment. And that's when I really decided to pursue, like, I could just be angry about this for the rest of my life, or try to at least harness that energy and use it towards good. And so that's when I decided to become a big brother to a black kid in Watts. He was 6 years old at the time, and we're still in touch to this day. And, you know, in the wake of this, yeah, I was angry. I was extremely angry. And every additional clip I see of small business owners getting beat up, places getting looted without any conscience, it angers me to no end. But again, I can let that energy fester in me and to the point where I just have hidden my heart, or I can try to channel that energy for good. So, like yesterday, I spent the day in the mountains with a black friend of mine named Kyle, and we just talked about ideas about how we can help the inner city through our collective networks. He's a musician. He works on the he tours with Katy Perry and works on a daytime show. What's her name? Kelly Clarkson?
Yep.
When you introduce him, do you say, "This is my black friend, Kyle"?
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, for points.
Well, sure, if for no other reason than, you know, Kyle is the de facto white frat boy name.
That's right.
No, but I do think all of this, like, negative energy can be harnessed and used towards good. And so, you know, this is a cause that I strongly believe in. And I think that's at least a productive way of grieving, if you will.
So let's get up to date. The store was looted on what day? And vandalized.
Saturday night. That's when the protests happened at nearby Pan Pacific Park, and then it was pretty peaceful. Except, no, that's not true, because I rushed up from where I live in Hermosa Beach when I saw it moving westbound, and I saw police cars on fire. So I drove to the store. We locked up. I sent my mom home, and I stood in front of the store for a while until it was just chaos. So I drove home to be with my sister and my mom to protect them, I guess, or just make sure they felt safe. And then I got the call from the alarm company later that evening, and they had ripped open the gate in the front. They had busted it open, and the inside was basically gutted. There were two guys in there, actually, when I showed up.
Really? And, was there anything left on the shelves? What were the two guys going for?
I mean, it was gutted pretty well. Actually, there was a decent amount of, like,
Mangria,
like high-end caps.
Mangria.
Mangria and Zima.
Actually, I was able to manage to grab some high-end caps. And I'd love to be able to gift it to Gina Adenbald, the lackeys, if you're into that stuff.
Sure.
Oh, please.
As a thank you for all this time, awesome. For you know, just all the years of entertainment.
Well, let's how's the GoFundMe working out?
Oh God. I'm gonna try to speak without getting emotional. The following day I had a conversation with one of my oldest friends, and he gently nudged me to do this. You know, I have a very immigrant mindset from the way my dad raised me, to pull yourself up by your bootstraps kind of talk. And I was reluctant because it felt like a handout, but I finally obliged. And I think it was like an arbitrary number, 15K, that was met within the first couple of hours. And then I think the next day or two, it doubled. So, you know, we're finding out we're not going to get a lot from our insurance. It's kind of being seen as complete loss. We're still.
Wait a minute. Why aren't you? This becomes a theme of today's show. But why aren't you going to get a lot from your insurance, or at least a fair amount from your insurance?
I don't know. My sister's dealing with that aspect of the business right now. This is all being relayed to me because I actually, you know, I have a separate job in the store. I've helped out, you know, twice a week on weekends. So I don't have a full grasp on the insurance side of things, if I'm honest.
But the insurance is not going to make you whole.
No.
And so what's the GoFundMe up to now? Is it at $30,000?
I don't know.
It's just off 33.
Oh, 33. Yeah.
That's
all
great.
Right.
I will
tell people to donate to save the St. Regis on GoFundMe. And let's get up to 50 so this hardworking immigrant family can get their life back together as much as you can. You know, it's not all about product and inventory and shelving. You know, there's a trauma here that, you know, I was kind of thinking about with my daughter the other day, which is like she has a little PTSD. She's been traumatized a little bit. A lot of people have been traumatized a little bit. And, you know, insurance checks are great and GoFundMe is fantastic, but that'll physically put everything back together, just like you could put a car back together. But if you've been in a bad accident, sometimes there's some residue there. And I guess that residue is you've already been through this process, Billy. You can choose to do something with that residue and sort of fester, and fear and anger is probably just giving, it's like a bank account that it's getting compound interest in a negative way. And, or you can do something positive, find, the one black man named Kyle and go on a hike. Wait, what's his name?
Kyle.
Oh, Kyle.
Yeah, right.
Right. And think of things to do. And by the way, you know, think of things to do. It occupies you. You know what I mean? Like having a plan, like coming up with an idea. I don't think people realize how important it is to have something to do, to have a purpose. Like literally, just, I'm going to go outside, I'm going to pull weeds. It sounds dumb, but it gives you a purpose. It like gives you a direction. It gives you something to do. That's why you're almost never unhappy or unsatisfied when you do that. You know that weekend where you go, I'm going to clean the garage this weekend. You think about those few weekends you went, I'm just going to turn up the stereo and I'm going to get my hands dirty. You've never been unhappy during those periods. You know, you've had something to do. You've had some purpose. You have a direction. You have something that occupies you. Need to get back.
Well, can I run the idea by you, Adam, real quick? Because sure. I had this epiphany when I took I told you I reconnected with my little brother and he's still in my life. And we went for a hike and I just saw
Catholic,
how he lit up.
Catholic little brother or little brother program.
No, big brother, little brother program.
Right. I just didn't want people at home thinking you're talking about a little brother who is
your actual brother.
Right. Okay. Yes. And I just saw how he lit up in the outdoors, because when you're outside, you know, you talk about it all the time, going on walks, and just something about that. Not only does it open up some endorphins, but it reveals this whole other world I'm sure they don't otherwise have access to. So I want to try to combine that, because I do the kind of work that I do is, you know, I'm a filmmaker in the outdoor space. And so this is my world. And I want to try to combine that with the inner city, with also just networking, you know, getting mentors involved and networking and giving, if they're interested in music, if they're interested in podcasting, Adam, maybe I'm going to put you on the spot here. Maybe you can open up your studio for tours so that people can see. Like, these are all the ideas.
All right. Like,
I'm trying to bridge that gap.
So I can get looted too? No, thanks. No, thank you, Bob Dixie. I wasn't born yesterday. Yeah, I do that all the time. I love doing that. And I'm completely open to it. So if you want to reach out off the air, so to speak, and come up with
some half-baked
ideas.
It's still half-baked, but yeah.
All right. Well, when it gets to the 7/8 baked mark, which they rarely discuss.
when it's al dente.
Yeah. When you get somewhere into the 15th, 16th baked zone, hit us up and I'll happily open my doors and heart. But not my wallet, to have you guys come in and mentor and take tours and look at the shop, the production as well. All right.
Thank you.
Billy, thank you very much. We're going to do Eat Your Feelings, Max Pata, Warburton. I'm trying to work out the math here, but yes.
Billy, send me a bottle of Screaming Eagle. Thank you.
Screaming Eagle. Thanks, Billy. Appreciate
That's
it.
It's $1,000 bottle of wine.
I knew it wasn't $2 Chuck. All right. Should we do we'll do a quick Eat Your Feelings here, and we'll bring on Patrick Warburton.
Gina Grad's Eat Your Feelings, brought to you by Home Chef.
She could not stop eating the sugar and the grains. Then our friend Betty helped her lose the weight she gained. Now she's cooking healthy meals at night. And ever since then, her clothes aren't as tight. It's time for Eat Your Feelings. Do some healthy eating with Gina's recipe.
What do we got? Go ahead, sir.
So obviously this isn't our normal Eat Your Feelings. We're all at home and you can't have anything that I cooked. So I'm going to try and paint the best word picture I can. I got to tell you, I was gifted some of these Home Chef meal kits, and I've never done a meal kit before. And when I cook, it's very experimental. I'll make something up from scratch or I'll heavily modify it to the point where I don't know if it's going to work. A lot of times it doesn't. And I start over and I do it again until something sort of edible comes out or hopefully delicious. This is not a concern with Home Chef. I don't know how common this is, but oh my God, the pictures are literally step by step. The instructions are very easy to tackle. I've done three so far. I did the beef and broccoli. We did the roasted beet and pistachio risotto, which at first I was like, huh, one of the most delicious things I've ever had. And last night we did the miso butter salmon and green bean with almonds. And I have pictures if you could put those up. These are what we made. That's the beef and broccoli.
Oh, that's good.
It was so much fun because Andy made that while I made the risotto, and we had a blast. Keep going. Show me the other pictures.
Let me ask you guys this quickly. That's the risotto. Sorry, with the beef and broccoli. The beef was cut in a way that's much thinner.
It's sliced like bulgogi style, like that Korean barbecue
yes,
style.
Yes, I like that so much better. I find myself oftentimes with sort of chunks, big kind of chunks of beef, and you're gnawing on it for a while, and it's screwing up the ratio of the beef and the broccoli. That's the way to do it.
You're absolutely right, and because it came this way, Andy goes, oh my God, I didn't even realize it because it is so perfect. He goes, I'm going to go to the butcher shop and ask for this kind of beef and make my own Philly cheesesteak in a bowl type thing. So it was just a great idea to have that kind of sliced beef and keep going because last night's was really the most incredible thing we ever had. Keep going. The salmon with miso butter. Holy hell. Nice. Now, as you guys know from my offerings, I never do fish. I'm afraid to cook fish. I don't know how. I didn't grow up eating it. I'm just afraid it's going to be overcooked, undercooked. I don't do it. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to tackle this salmon. The salmon's not going to get the best of me. Freaking easy. All you do is pat it dry, some salt and pepper, put it skin side up, sear it, and then throw it in the oven. It was delectable. It was perfect. It was crispy on top. The miso butter was white miso paste, butter, and garlic. And it was so like savory and umami. And every bite, we just wish we could keep eating it. And then just these simple green beans. It was just, we're having so much fun cooking these things. And we have our little one here who loves to cook and he's doing it with us. And it's just, I mean, really, really kudos and applause to Home Chef because it is delicious food, easy to make, inventive recipes that I've never thought of, and very, very good. I'm so impressed.
Well, I'll tell you about my experience in a second. All right, let's bring it home because Warburton's waiting on hold.
Eat your feelings. Do some healthy eating.
And
with Gina's recipe.
Thank you, Gina Grad.
Brought to you by Home Chef.
Oh, there you go. So many meal kit services out there. Yeah, let me hit Home Chef here. It's hard to find the right one for you. That's what sets Home Chef apart. Simply choose your menu and adjust the delivery dates. Box arrives at your doorstep weekly with recipe cards and fresh, perfectly portioned ingredients. oven-ready recipes. Just combine the pre-chopped ingredients and ready-to-cook throwaway tins, so it's that much easier. Toss it in and 30 minutes or so, no prep, no mess, you're ready to eat. They even do meals that are ready in 15 minutes. Olga did me the steak with the chimichurri butter and the side of asparagus. So if those of you are staying keto, that's the most delicious way you can do it for a limited time. Go to homechef.com/Adam. Get $30 off. That's homechef.com/Adam for $30 off. All right, we'll take a very quick break. We'll come back with Patrick Warburton right after this.